Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. And I'm here alongside my co-host, Mike Neff, at least via Skype. And Neff, we got a lot to talk about this week. But before we get into the racing from this past weekend and on Monday night with the Xfinity Series Bristol Motor Speedway, I feel like we got to start with the elephant in the room. And obviously that is with what's going on in the real world. So I want to dedicate some time to talk about that with you. Obviously, you know, this country, it's in a rough spot right now. With everything we're seeing on the TV, with people in power doing, you know, making bad decisions. It's just really tough right now, and it's tough to watch. Very sad. But it all started, I mean, it's been around forever, but this incident at least started last Monday, where obviously George Floyd in Minnesota, Minneapolis, was essentially, it's deemed a homicide now.
Yeah, he was killed.
Yeah. And the police officer got charged third degree murder, obviously was fired pretty quick. But now if this is a tough subject, and I feel like a lot of people don't want to talk about it, or maybe aren't educated enough to talk about it, honestly. And maybe I'm in that boat. But this is a tough time, in the world. And it's really sad to see what's been happening over the past week now.
Breaks my heart, man. I mean, I love being an American. I love being part of this country, which at one time was the greatest country in the world. But if you ever watch that rant on video from, I can't remember the name of the show now, but the guy goes off on the fact that we used to be the greatest country in the world. Now we're like 7th in education and 15th in poverty and all that kind of stuff. And I see it happening. And I made a comment on social media this weekend that when I was a kid, you know, I felt like things got better. I was born in 1963. I have vague memories of the protests in the Vietnam War and things like that in the early segments of it. But after, when we got to the 70s and just the protest movements and the free love and just everybody loving each other, it felt like that was a step in the right direction. And then for 20-something years, it seemed like we made a lot of progress. But in looking back at it in the last handful of years, it feels like it was all a lie. And I see it in talking with my friends that are minorities that tell me that, you know, I see stuff and I'm like, I can't believe this happened. And they're like, that happens every day.
Right.
It's something we deal with every day. Damn. And I don't know if you get the people that talk about it being a systemic prejudice. And there is bias to it. I mean, there's real reasons and there's artificial reasons as to why that prejudice exists in the law enforcement judicial community. I mean, it's known facts that there are more minorities in, you know, incarcerated than white people. And yes, there's probably more criminals that are minority than white people, but it's because of their lot in life that they're dealt with from birth. And it's something where we all have to work to get it, make it better, work on getting better. And everybody has responsibility in this thing. I'm not saying it's just white people. It's definitely not just black people. But it's, I don't know how we go about fixing straight up racism in the country, but from the systemic, you know, law enforcement, judicial system side, there are leaders that need to step forward and lay down rules and guidance and leadership that basically gets this thing steered in the right direction. And I'm talking police chiefs, union leaders for the police unions, judges, you know, governors, mayors. These people all need to get in a room with leaders of minority organizations, of Caucasian organizations, of everything, and all get together and start working on how we get rid of that bias. And the fact that if somebody sees a minority in a nice car that's a law enforcement person, the first thought should not be, I wonder if that person stole that car.
Right.
And right now, sadly, in 2020, we are still of that mindset, and that needs to change.
Yeah, couldn't have said any better. It's terrifying. And obviously, you know, both of us are white, and you know, I've never been in a position where I've had to worry, whether it's with law enforcement or whatever, just based on the color of my skin. And that'll never be that way. I mean, let's be honest. And just for white people, but for African Americans, man, it's hard to watch. And I'm all for peaceful protesting. I really am. And you know, it's been good to see. Like you see, and let's face it, the news is attracted to negativity. So they're going to look at all these riots and in the vandalism and the looting that we've been seeing over the past, you know, week now, really since Thursday. And they're going to be attracted to that. But then we don't hear as much about a peaceful protest. For instance, you know, I was driving through town this week and look, I live in a very rural community, kind of out in the middle of nowhere. But, you know, 15 minutes down the road, you have a small city in Auburn, and you know, not too far away, about an hour away, Syracuse, an hour the other opposite direction, Rochester, which obviously was hit hard this weekend. But in Auburn this week, I was driving through town before the cup race on Sunday, and there was a peaceful protest, and it was cool to see. They were obviously streaming it live on social media, so I was watching it. And it's cool to see everyone kind of partake in it. And people want to make an impact, I just don't know. I don't know if anyone really knows how to make an impact from the opposite race, is I guess what I'm trying to say. And so, like, Saturday night, for instance, I was watching CNN, and there was a really powerful moment there in Minnesota with an African-American guy kind of talking about, and this kind of ties into what you were talking about. I think he was mid-20s maybe, so about my age, probably a little older. I don't know if he gave his name, so I can't give him credit, but if you know what I'm talking about, I'm sure you've seen videos of it. Very powerful moment saying how it's up to our generation, the generation I'm in, because there has been a gap. Like your generation, Neff, I feel like it was so much different in handling racism and everything. You know, obviously it was very, you know, frequent back then, you know, 40, 50 years ago. And I thought we were making progress, but then you see what's happened this past week, and it's like, oh my God. So I don't know. I can just think of everything. I just hope it turns around. It's tough to talk about. It's very uncomfortable, but I feel like it's what it has to be. In order to get educated about this stuff, it's going to be uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
Look, I'm part Puerto Rican. My father's 50% Puerto Rican. His dad was 100% Puerto Rican. So I've got Puerto Rican family members that are from Puerto Rico. They moved to Rochester in... My dad's cousin, her husband is the fire chief. He's African American. He's one of the fire chiefs at one of the Rochester's fire stations. So, it hits home, and maybe a lot of us don't know why it hits home because we're not black. But this has been a terrible week for America, and I just hope it stops before it, you know, escalates even further. But that might be wishful thinking at this point.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I understand frustration. I look at Colin Kaepernick.
Mm-hmm.
He was peacefully protesting. I didn't agree with it, and I've made that point in the podcast before, that, I'm incredibly proud to be an American, and there is no prouder moment for me as an American than the playing of our national anthem. And I have always felt that white, black, purple, green... you know, Chinese, black, Hispanic, Puerto Rican, any whatever, race. At the moment that anthem plays and we all stand up, we are all American. You can have any difference of opinions, you can have every difference of beliefs, and we have to work together and understand those of each other. But at that moment when the anthem plays, we are all Americans, and that is that 1, 2 minutes and 15 seconds or so that we should all be together as Americans. And that was why I had a problem with Kaepernick kneeling during the anthem, because I felt like he was trying to be anti-American. And outside of that, I had total understanding of his desires and what he was trying to accomplish. And the fact that he did a peaceful protest and has lost his income, has lost his position in the sport that he loves, and has basically had to battle to try to make the change that he's trying to do simply because he got ostracized for the way he protested.
Right.
So I don't understand. No matter how much you try, you're never going to get everybody pleased or on board with how you go about your protest. But the destruction of people's businesses and property, especially when we're coming out of this pandemic,
yeah,
and people are finally getting able to open their stores again, and people are turning around and just destroying their stuff, it's idiotic. And to see them defacing national monuments, that breaks my heart too, and I don't understand what you're trying to accomplish. And it's a thing where I feel like there should be, whether it's town halls or public forums or whatever, where we could get together and just talk and give the people the respect to listen, not just hear, but listen to what they're saying, what they're dealing with. And then everybody try to make their life that little bit better so that in the end, we're all better.
Yeah. Well said. It's a tough subject. And you know, you brought up Kaepernick and, you know, his type of protesting now. It's so peaceful compared to what's going on right now. And granted, there's a lot of peaceful protesting, like I said, going on right now. Don't get me wrong. But in terms of, like, the looting and the vandalism, I mean, that happened 4 years ago, too, around the same time, at the same time, that when Kaepernick was protesting. But now you see it in so many cities across America. And it's so heartbreaking. You know, you brought up kind of, you know, some of the looting, but like in Rochester the other day, obviously I'm not being biased, but I see it on the news because I'm from the area, and it went viral. There was a husband and wife, I don't know, it looked like they were older.
Oh God, yeah. The man beat her with a 2x4.
Yeah, so there was a group of men, probably a handful at least, they had 2x4s, and they're, you know, the owners coming out trying to protect their business, and they just get beaten almost to death. And it was horrifying to watch. That's not what this is about. That's not what we need right now. We need peaceful protesting. We need people in charge to make some sort of statements. You know, you see a lot of the NASCAR drivers are starting to make statements. A lot of the NBA teams and NFL teams and the NFL, the NASCAR came out with a statement. There's so many people in high, not power, but they're looked at, and their word has value.
Yep.
And so we need more of that for sure. And we need to all be, you know, become more educated. And I think that starts, honestly, with the school systems in like elementary school, because, you know, I went to a really good school, I thought, but you're not, and we're taught about racism, but not to, a, you know, only to a certain degree. And maybe that's how they look at it in the educational systems. But I think learning about it needs to become uncomfortable, because it is an uncomfortable topic. But man, what's going on?
It's uncomfortable until it goes away.
Yeah, and it's hard to see it going away because it's been here for so long, but it's so tough, and it really is heartbreaking. I think you summed it up perfectly when you answered the first question. It is heartbreaking, and it's terrifying to watch.
Yeah, I pray for America. I pray for all of us, and I don't know, like I said, I don't know what it takes to get better. All I know is I can make myself better. And if each of us all tries to make ourselves better, we can make a difference. Kareem was on with Scott Van Pelt last night, and he issued a bit of a challenge to tell everyone their challenge for the week was to go out and introduce yourself to a person that is a different color than you are, that you don't know. And I'm like, that would be a great step in the right direction. I mean, because you know, you're going to have discussion just by introducing yourself and getting to know the person a little bit. Mm-hmm. And if every person in America made a new friend that was a different race from them, that would be a positive step in the right direction.
Right. Yeah, totally agree. And that is a good goal. And something we could both definitely do too. I mean, I want to learn. Sure. I want to be more educated. I want to make an impact. Some, you know, as little as it is, But it's tough because this is a very tough subject. And Neff, you know, we spent 15 minutes on this, but, you know, going into NASCAR now, Sunday's race, the Cup race, to me, like, I love racing, and I know you do too, but for me, it almost felt not meaningless, but it was a distraction for sure. And I think at the time, you know, just like the pandemic, which you brought up a little bit ago, NASCAR is pretty much the first sport back. I know UFC had a fight or two before NASCAR, but NASCAR is the real, you know, first real sport back. And then NASCAR is kind of the first real sport back, you know, during this, you know, unfortunate scenario we've had over the past week or so too. So I don't know. I don't know how you felt going into the race, but at first it's like, oh, I don't even really feel comfortable not watching this because it was a distraction, but it almost didn't feel like it needed to happen, but obviously it did. I don't know. I'm spinning out. I'm probably talking on my ass right now, but I don't know. It was a distraction.
I mean, it's Bristol and I was excited about it. I mean, life has to go on. And if nothing else has come out of the ridiculous looting and rioting, we're not talking about coronavirus anymore.
Right.
So I'm curious, we got another week here and then we're going to find out how it really played out, because all these riders that were running around with no masks on screaming and hollering and rubbing up against each other are going to be getting the virus. We should have some giant.
Yeah, there's going to be another spike. There's going to be another spike, which then could lead to another shutdown, and it'll just be all over again. But
yeah.
Neff, talk.
No, I enjoyed. I felt like it was necessary. I thought anything, it was good to be going on with life in the order that it was supposed to go on, because we had a schedule and we stuck to it, and we got a good race too.
Very good race.
It took a bit longer than I anticipated for the second and third grooves, and I don't know if the third groove ever really did open up. But eventually in a race, we did get to where we had multiple grooves, and that's what I love about New Bristol. I know a lot of people hate it, but I think it's fantastic when we get multiple grooves there, and just strategies and rebounds and just efforts. I thought there was a lot that went on in that race, and in the end, we had a humongous moment coming with two to go that I wish there had been a live crowd there, because that place would have exploded when Elliott got into Logano. But Brad Keselowski, to finish first, you must first finish. He had himself in the right position, and he made it work.
Yeah, I used that adage in a post-race column that I wrote about Keselowski, to finish first, you must finish, because that's two out of the last three races that he's kind of stole. And unfortunately for Chase Elliott, both being from him, obviously this week also Joey Logano. But yeah, Keselowski, the two team takes advantage of the Logano, Chase Elliott dust up. Was it coming two to go or was it three to go?
I thought it was coming two to go.
Two to go, regardless. And that came after a restart with five to go for an incident on 11 laps to go, and Denny Hamlin, who was leading. You know, you brought up the old Bristol. He kind of overstepped his boundaries in the top lane, got in the wall, which is not uncommon for Sunday's race. We saw the same thing with Ryan Blaney earlier in the race, battling for the lead, and then get hit by Ty Dillon. And then Joey Logano was involved in that one because he took the lead. Then the next corner, he did the same thing. And Kyle Busch came on the radio and was like, I think there's some kind of water on the track or something. So yeah, it set up for that duel between, you know, at the end. And I mean, I want to get your opinion on the Chase Elliott, Joey Logano incident, because we'll talk about Keselowski here in a minute, but he could have won four or five races in a row now. He's obviously won the Charlotte race, the second Charlotte race. And was this just him trying too hard? Because he was the leader. He, you know, after the Logano Hamlin incident, when they both ran into the wall, Chase got the lead. And then on the restart, he was the control car, got the lead. Logano passed him. And then Elliott just drove it off into, I think it was turn three, and just got loose underneath Logano, and they both went into the wall. Is it just a racing deal?
Yeah, it's just a racing deal. I mean, we got two laps to go at Bristol. You've got eight tires corner better than four. We hear that all the time. And that whether you want to like it or dislike it, he sailed it in there. The back end stepped out on him a little bit. He washes up in Logano and it's silver. And it's, I got no problem with it. I had all sorts of people losing their minds. Logano's coming back saying, you wrecked me. And I'm like, not really. He pretty much, if he had wrecked you, he'd have kept going and you would have been, you know, smeared on the inside wall. You both were able to keep going because he just washed it up and Keselowski got underneath him. So I had no problem with it. If I had a driver that had a shot at the win with two to go and he didn't sail it in there like that, I'd be pissed. And I would rather finish 20th because I went for it than finish in second because I didn't go for it.
And that's what these guys ended up finishing, was I think 21st and 22nd. But, you know, obviously post-race Logano was upset, called Chase childish. I thought that...
Yeah, and he said he passed him clean. Bullshit. I am calling total bullshit on that. Freaking, I've seen dirty sliders in my life at enough dirt tracks in this country, and Logano threw a dirty slider on Elliott. He was not clear of him and freaking muscled his car up in front of him, made slight contact with the front of Elliott's car. So if you're making contact as you're sliding up in front of somebody, you didn't pass them clean. That was dirty. And if you're going to claim that was clean, I'm calling you out.
Well, and I guess I agree with you, but then in the Chase incident, right? Like, it was a racing deal, totally. And, you know, like you said, I'd want, if I was the driver, I totally want to go for that win instead of, you know, kind of being relegated to second. And we'll talk about that again here in the Xfinity race coming up. But
yeah.
I thought going into turn one, that this was after Logano got the lead. Chase definitely bumped him, kind of gave him a couple bumps. It reminded me similar of Hamlin Elliott at Martinsville a couple years ago. But roles were reversed this time. Yeah. You know, Hamlin was obviously, or Elliott was in Hamlin's position, Logano being in Hamlin's, Elliott's position back then, getting all sorts of tongue-tied. But I don't know. I thought both were racing deals, but both could have been avoided if you just wanted to race clean for the win. But it's Bristol. And Bristol, I mean, that's...
And again, I'm not saying Joey was wrong in throwing the dirty slider. But don't get on TV and act all high and mighty that you passed him clean, because that was not a clean pass. He was going for it. He had enough in front of him that he knew if he muscled up there, Elliott was either going to have to back off or wreck both of them. And Elliott chose to step back, let him get by him, dove back under him, and then ultimately led it to the final incident. But, yeah, don't get on your pulpit and tell us how clean your pass was when you made contact with the car as you were sliding up in front of them.
I will say, like, we saw a lot of cars get loose out of control this weekend. It is good to see that again with this, you know, with this package. Obviously, it's a bit different from last year, a lot better than last year. We're now two races in with it, you know, also being Phoenix, and we've had two really good races. When last year, this car would have been stuck to the ground, and it was a slot car, essentially, and it wouldn't get out of control. But it's good to see the drivers being able to drive now. It's also funny, though, this incident we're talking about still. Chase, just by happenstance, the way they pulled into the pits, he's parked two cars behind the 22, gets out of the car. They both get out of the car. Chase is, you can totally tell with the television, that he's just lollygagging around, kind of. Wanting to make eye contact at all with Logano. So Logano said, you know, post-race in that same video on television you're talking about, and then also he did an Instagram video where he kind of talked about confronting him and, you know, calling him childish and whatnot. And he said that he gave him like a minute before going over and confronting him. And obviously they didn't fight or anything. Verbally they had a disagreement. But I don't know. Logano says he's owned up to his mistakes in the past, and he has to a degree. Some of the mistakes that he's made, like, I don't think the Kenseth deal at, like, Kansas wasn't really a mistake. That was battling for the win, too. Obviously, that hurt Logano in the long run when Kenseth dumped him at Martinsville 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
But I don't know. This is good for racing, for sure. And you have the most popular driver involved in two altercations, or at least incidents, over the past, what, four races now. And that's good for the sport, right?
Absolutely. the idea that your most popular driver is mixing it up and having altercations at all is good for the sport because it's going to draw more eyes. But the fact that it's to a driver, the altercations are with drivers that might not be the most popular in the sport, Kyle Busch and Joey Logano, that absolutely makes it even more to talk about it, drawing more eyes to it. So it'll be interesting to see how this continues on down the road. I mean, and in all honesty, I'm glad to see it out of Chase.
Yeah.
Because he's been used up and taken advantage of, I think, because he's such a clean racer for several years as he was coming into this thing. And to now be like, and Logano was the same way. Remember the driver suit at Pocono?
Yeah.
He finally started standing up for himself. And I feel like Chase is doing the same thing. He's starting to throw that nose in there maybe when it's not totally optimal. And he's whether he's standing up for himself in confrontations or standing up with his car during the race, I feel like he's being more aggressive. And if with his talent, if he is more aggressive, it's going to lead to a bunch more wins.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And there was this deal, like when he won his first truck race, I think it was at the Canadian tire track or whatever, the road course there in Canada, where he kind of moved Ty Dillon out of the way and wrecked Ty Dillon. But outside of that, it was about a long time since we've really seen him be so aggressive up until this year. And honestly, you got to think it's because he's so... I want to word this carefully because in the past couple of years, I mean, for him, the speed's been there. For like Jimmy Johnson, the rest of Hendrick Motorsports, really, it wasn't all there. Obviously, Alex Bowman won a race last year. But Chase has been the standout at Hendrick for 3-4 years now.
Yep.
And this year, I would consider him right now like 1A championship favorite. You know, there's a couple drivers that are on top of each other, but consistently, the 9 car is the fastest car every week. And he finishes races off, maybe not with wins, but with solid finishes, unless, you know, what happened the other night. So, I don't necessarily know if he needs to be so aggressive as he would have, like, the past couple of years, you know? Because the speed's actually there now. But it is good to see, you know, the most popular driver getting involved in these incidents with, like you said, kind of NASCAR villains. I wouldn't say that they're not the most popular drivers, because Kyle Busch is pretty popular. I think post-race last year, after he won the championship in Miami, he said he's the most popular driver. He'll just never win the award. So, yeah. So,
that was one of those things that I always wondered back in the day when Elliott was rattling off all those most popular driver awards. He walked through the stands, 80% of the merchandise was black.
Right.
And has Intimidator and 3 and Dale's head on it. And Elliott keeps winning this most popular driver thing. And I'm like, I don't know how this deal works. But they obviously aren't doing it based on merchandise sales because the Intimidator would have been well ahead of that. But yeah, Kyle Busch is popular, but he's also unpopular.
Right. A lot of people hate him.
Popular, but you don't really have the unpopular side. And that's where this could turn south on him if he starts roughing up too many people. But I feel like he's getting just to the right level of aggression to where he could really start going on a roll and winning a lot of races.
See, I'm kind of on the other side of that. I think the more incidents he's involved in, it might be not better for him, but it won't hurt him. Because we really haven't had a most popular driver. Obviously, it's really been Elliott, you know, Bill, his dad, obviously, and Dendale Jr. I mean, really, for the past 30 years or so.
Bernard when he died.
Right.
Difference.
But for the past 30 years, it's been an Earnhardt or an Elliott. And, I mean, I can't recall many incidents where, you know, Bill Elliott or Dale Jr. would kind of get into. I mean, Jr.'s been in his share of incidents. But not with really, you know, NASCAR villains. Kyle Busch, sure. But that was when Kyle Busch was still kind of in infancy of his Cup days. Just moving over JGR in 2008 at Richmond. But regardless, Kyle Busch needed a security escort out of the track that night.
Yes.
But I do want to talk to you about this, Neff, because, you know, I hate to beat the dead horse, but that incident should have been a caution, right? The one with Logano and Chase?
Oh, God, yeah. We had at least three cautions during that race where people scared the wall. I don't even know how hard they hit it, that they scared it. And the caution immediately flew. And then you get Elliott pancaking Logano into the outside wall. Debris coming off the cars, yeah. You saw some of it, and we stay green. And I got a caution with this because, in reality, I don't want that to be a caution because both cars were rolling. There was no reason for them to throw that. But if that's not a caution, the other three or four times that you threw it during a race when there was really no reason to don't need to be cautions. And that's where... I know it's a catch 22 and you're damned if you do and damned if you don't on these caution things, but I'm with the Darrell Waltrip mindset. Unless there was a bumper laying in the middle of the groove, they didn't throw a caution back in the day. And I wish we'd get back to those because I know restarts are when most of the action happens in these races and that weighs in on these cautions flying, but there was no reason for several of the cautions that flew during that race.
Yeah, so I'm going to probably rant on this one pretty good because we talked about this at nauseam last year and it was irritating at times, and this is also irritating. Absolutely should have been a caution on Sunday between Chase and Logano. They pounded the wall, like you said, debris flying off the cars as you could see on TV. Definitely in the replays after the race you could see it. And it really pisses me off because, like you said, there was a whole bunch of cautions that probably shouldn't have been. But on top of that, Neff, there were two competition cautions on Sunday on laps 20 and 60. And then you talk about, you know, the three or four incidents that probably shouldn't have been cautions. Kevin Harvick, he had a flat tire. He didn't even hit, he might have bounced off the wall, but he didn't hit the wall when the caution flag flew. I think the next corner he hit the wall. Austin Dillon had a right front go flat, didn't hit the wall at all. He couldn't get out of traffic because, you know, it's like a conveyor belt at Bristol, the world's fastest one. Couldn't get to pit road, they threw a caution, didn't touch the wall. Ryan Preece scuffed the wall, they threw a caution. Chris Buescher probably should have been a caution because he pounded the wall, at least it looked like from his right side. There wasn't really a good replay. But that's three or four on top of the two competition cautions that shouldn't really be cautions. And then you have this one that, you know, Logano and Chase should have been a caution, in my opinion. And
absolutely.
I don't know. It was just, it goes back to what is and what isn't a caution again. And that's irritating that, because at the beginning of the year, I thought NASCAR did a good job of kind of holding the yellow flag, not throwing out. And really some stage breaks kind of came into play because that's two cautions right there. But they've been good at holding back the caution flag. Sure, there are times where maybe it should or should not have come out. Usually should not have. In this case, it should have. I don't know, Neff. It goes back to what is and what isn't a caution. And it's not black and white, really.
No, it never is. And different tracks justify different things. I mean, a car significantly outpaced at Bristol is probably a greater detriment than, say, Charlotte or something like that, where you've got a little more room to get around. But there just needs to be some consistency. And it was terrible. I couldn't believe. And you want to talk about who's mad about that not being a caution is Kyle Busch. If you watch the replay, after that happens, they're headed to the finish line. Busch blatantly jumps on the brakes to let Johnson get ahead of him so that he'll restart in the outside lane for the caution, and then they don't throw a caution. So it ends up costing Busch a spot in the finish order because he was trying to play the game. And while we talk about playing the game, can we throw this out? The talk has finally come back up from actual drivers that we need a choose cone.
Yeah.
And I am so glad to hear that. But we need to get some momentum on that, too, because the shenanigans on pit lane and the fact that you are just you're hamstrung by 2 to 5 positions based on starting in one lane versus the other is idiotic. And these drivers are supposed to be the best in the world. They can handle a choose cone. But back to the caution thing, I'm with you. I don't know if we need a meeting of the driver committee or whatever to try and come up with some at least suggested guidelines on what a caution is and is not. It just needs to have more consistency. And you know my opinion, excuse me, on competition cautions. How about the Xfinity race? I know we're jumping back and forth, but they have a competition caution and the top 15 guys don't come in. If you need a competition caution to check tire wear and make sure that we're all safe, then everybody has to come in. That simple. Competition caution should be handled the way that first one was at Darlington. When everybody came in, they were allowed whatever it was, 2 minutes or 4 minutes to make changes, go back out, and you went back out in the same position you came in. That's how competition caution should be. Get rid of the shenanigans, get rid of strategy calls on a competition call. All right, off my soapbox.
No, I totally agree with you on that one. And at Darlington, it was you had a lap, essentially, from the time the pace car – you pitted twice. You could pit twice and not lose your position. But one was to work on the car. The other one was to change tires. And you went, if as long as you got out before the pace car came back around and got to the end of pit road and you beat them off, then you could you were allowed your position back. So I agree with you on that. But, yeah, this should not have – this should have been a caution in this case, Elliott and Logano, and then all these other bogus cautions really shouldn't have been a caution. But regardless enough, you know, we've talked, I said we'd get back talking about Kozlowski, and I do want to get back talking about him now. Obviously in a contract year, he's kind of has been very non-committal to Penske. He hasn't really said that he would or wouldn't, or he's not leaning one way or the other, at least in the public eye. But this is his second victory in three races. Jeremy Bullins has got two victories now with him at the cup level. Obviously won three with Ryan Blaney over the past couple of years, but he had one of the best cars on Sunday, and you could throw a toss up between who's the best team right now. Hendrick looks to have the most raw speed, but the win column says Team Penske 4, Hendrick 2. So I don't know. I think Team Penske's got the advantage, at least when it comes to finishing off races right now.
Yeah, if anything, Team Penske's got the best winning strategy. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. It's varied race to race, but invariably, and we've seen this for a couple of years, honestly, out of Hendrick, although more this year because they've actually got more speed. But even in situations before where they didn't necessarily have the speed, but they were still in good positions, they didn't close the deal. They didn't finish the race. And Penske's been the opposite. Keselowski's been out to lunch quite a bit over these first handful of races and has still got two wins. And it's a matter of working on it, getting it right, and it ultimately getting to where, you know, they're in a position to win a race. And when it falls in their lap, they take advantage of it. Hendrick has had Byron, Bowman, even Johnson have had the fastest cars on track multiple times and shot themselves in the foot. And that is so not Hendrick. And that is the part that is most surprising to me, is that you've got the organization that's been at the pinnacle for a long time, has had a couple down years, now they're tasting the success again and choking on it. And I have to assume that we will get to a point where we stop choking on it. But right now, Hendrick has had the best speed and Penske's had the best results.
Yeah, for sure. And for that reason, I mean, look, when it comes down to it, the results matter. Because that's – Keselowski essentially has 10 playoff points right now that he should not have.
Yep.
In terms of – you know, we talked at nauseam last week on the podcast about the Coke 600 call – and how Ellie and Alan Gustafson were kind of in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. Yep. But Keselowski, I mean, he's going to stay out. I think he would have stayed out regardless. So, yeah, that's 5 points. And then this week, probably should have finished third, although he did probably have one of the top two cars, I would say, all race long, led 115 laps from the pole. You know, but got another 5 points, which he probably should have finished third or fourth. With 40 laps to go, he pitted and restarted 12th. So that's a pretty impressive drive over 40 laps with a couple of cautions. So good for Keselowski, good for the two team, that they're kind of, you know, kind of what they're making it, they're taking advantage of other people's mistakes or, you know, calls on the racetrack. So good for Keselowski, two wins. But enough, you know, we've obviously had a rash of races here over the past 2 weeks.
It's been glorious.
It has been glorious. Five cup races, three Xfinity races, one truck race. How are you? Only one time have we had qualifying, which was the 600. I don't know about you, but I'm really enjoying this format of no practice in qualifying. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago a lot, but five races in now, at least at the cup level, it just, it's so great to watch. And I think it makes for, you know, the people that are out to lunch early, like a Truex, for instance, at Darlington or even at Charlotte last week. They have to work on their car all race long and then they get it better and they're racing towards the front. I don't know. I love this format.
I mean, I don't mind if we have qualifying. I'm indifferent about qualifying, but I've maintained for decades that there's way too much practice in asphalt racing. I would have no problem if they ran the cup, actually any of the National Series weekends like they do World of Outlaws. You come out, they give you a hot lap session, you go out in a group of four and you get five laps. And that's it. And then you set up to qualify, you qualify in your race. I would have no problem with that. That gives guys a chance to, you know, shake out, have their ballast fall out before the race starts. You know, whatever problems they're going to have with their car, if they're blatant that somebody missed something, they'll find it in hot laps. But outside of that, no, we don't need 4 or 5 hours of practice on a race weekend. I'm completely into it. The only other thing I would say is if we do qualifying, I still want an invert. The key is going to be, it has to be a fluctuating invert. Because, and we've seen this in the last two or three races, there are guys that are going to finish 14th that drop back or sandbag it so they try to get to 20th because they want to be on the pole for the next race. And if they know what position is going to be that pole position, they're gonna play those games. So we need to have a situation where you have qualifying, the winner of the pole reaches in a bag and pulls out a pill that has a number somewhere between 8 and 20, and whatever he pulls out is what they invert. And that way you don't have guys playing games to decide where they're gonna try to qualify or where they're gonna end up. But yeah, I'm on board with the format. I don't have a problem if they do away with practice forever. Again, I don't mind qualifying. I like seeing guys, you know, go out and just lay it on a ragged edge and lay down a fast lap. But if we did away with it, I wouldn't lose sleep. But yeah, I think one-day shows are the wave of the future. That said, that's a bummer for the promoters because, you know, they draw in a little more foot traffic, a little more butts in the seats if they have multiple days of activity on track. But hopefully, knock on wood, if they stop having the practice to do it, they'll start running some other races. And maybe we get the modified tour, we get the K&N series, we get ARCA, you know, we get the Southern Super Series, we get some of these other series to come out and put on a race in conjunction with a cup weekend. I think that would be really cool too.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you said. Really can't add any more because you talked a lot about a lot of different things there. But Neff, before we move on, I want to talk quickly, and you can just talk about these guys briefly or just hit on who you want to, but good finishes this weekend for Clint Bowyer, his first runner-up finish in over a year. Jimmy Johnson, third. That was his Ty's best finish since his last win almost, well, 3 years ago now. Austin Dillon finished sixth, consecutive top tens for the first time since the end of 2018. Christopher Bell, ninth. Really good run, ran in the top five a lot of the day. And then Bubba Wallace came back from starting 36th to finish 10th. All good runs for those guys.
Yeah, congrats to Bowyer. Speaking of being in the right place at the right time, I don't know where he was the whole race.
Yeah.
I mean, I never really saw him the whole race. And then literally, as it's getting ready to wind down, I'm like, hey, Bowyer's in the top 10. And then that incident happens, and he passes like five cars and goes from like 7th to 2nd on the way to the end of the race. So, yeah. kudos to him. Congrats to Jimmy on Kyle Busch giving him third place. Because if Kyle hadn't been playing that game, he'd come in fourth. I felt terrible for Tyler Reddick. Reddick was running a great race, really having a good day, and, you know, got caught up in that Stenhouse incident. Otherwise, I think that would have been another great race for the 8 team. I feel like they're gonna get that lightning in a bottle at some point this season and win a race. It just feels like it from the amount of speed that they've had. But yeah, really cool seeing Bell finally kind of live up to expectations a little bit. I've honestly felt like the 95 team has underperformed a little of what we expected out of them. Just knowing that what De Benedetto did and the resources that are going into that. But Bubba Wallace, after the frustration he had at Charlotte last week, to see him have that good finish was really enlightening. It was enjoyable. Let's just say that.
Yeah, definitely for the team it was. And, you know, obviously we spent the first 15 minutes or so talking about racism in America right now. Bubba Wallace and Ty Dillon did an Instagram live video Monday night. Ty posted it on his regular feed too. Highly advise everybody watch that video. It's 28 minutes long. And Ty wanted to do it to become educated, kind of like we want to do. And we want to become educated. And Bubba talked about some incidents that he's had, you know, run-ins with the police. Also, how he's been treated in racing for being an African-American. And he's going to be on the Dale Jr. Download. You know, they're recording it later today, Tuesday as we record. It'll probably come out either Tuesday or Wednesday. Definitely looking forward to that one because he'll probably get in-depth on a lot of uncomfortable subjects. And it'll be good to become educated about those subjects. Neff, anything else on that?
No, I think we're good.
All right, Neff. Well, before we go any further, support for the Front Church Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below the bell grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for those family jewels. Now, Neff, I'm not going to ask you about a story this week. I'm sure you're thankful for that.
I am.
But I hate razor bumps. I know I've said that, you know, multiple times on this podcast, but it's a thing. It's a real thing. And not fun on your face, on obviously below the belt. So Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer to help me and to help others listening to this ad read right now. The Manscaped engineering team spent 18 months perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created. And it just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. Their third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents around the world. And millions of balls are about to be nick free thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin safe technology. Manscaped accidents are finally in the rearview mirror.
Truly. And when we talk about this being a premium trimmer, we mean premium. There are several features which set it apart from the rest. The first, don't forget they updated their battery, so now it will last 90 minutes. You could take the time to be precise and be thorough when you're doing your manscaping. You can also take it with you for a long weekend and stay nice and trimmed up all weekend long to keep the ladies happy. One of the other cool features is there's an LED light that illuminates your grooming area so you can make sure you get every last small fragment of hair that is clogging up your man region. They've upgraded their motor to a Quiet Stroke Technology 7,000 RPM motor, so you get high-speed, clean cuts, clean clips, and a great trim. And do not forget about the charging stand. You can show your mower off loud and proud because it has an intelligently designed stand convenient for charging using just a USB.
For sure. And that LED light, you know, firsthand definitely comes an experience. But if you're listening to us speak right now, I want you to experience this firsthand for yourself and trim that junk of yours. Now get 20% off and free shipping with the code FRONTSTRETCH at manscaped.com. Again, get 20% off and free shipping with the code FRONTSTRETCH at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code FRONTSTRETCH.
Your balls will thank you.
They definitely will, Neff. And, you know, I'm thankful getting back into the racing side of things for the Xfinity race on Monday night. It brought some entertainment on a Monday, a weekday, and it was a hell of a race. As most Xfinity races are these days, But this was a classic short track battle. You had a battle between Junior Motorsports teammates late in the going with Noah Gragson and Justin Allgaier, who dominated the race. The third straight race he's dominated at Bristol and come up on the short on the stick with all three times. Wins. Yeah, he hasn't won there in 10 years when it was his first win. He's led over 600 laps since then at Bristol and no wins. So I feel bad for him. I'd love, though, to be, you know, obviously we're social distancing still, and there's no meetings at the shop, really. But if there was, I'm sure it'll be via Zoom. I still would love to be on that Zoom call with Junior Motorsports this week.
I'd be interested, but it's bottom line, it's going to come from the top. And I don't know that Junior sits in on those meetings, if Kelly sits in on them, who it is that's kind of the voice for the company. But it could be a very short meeting if whoever's in charge basically says, good job, nice win, and leaves it at that.
That's good. True point.
You don't want to wreck your teammate. I don't know that Noah wrecked him. He got in on the inside of him because Justin washed up. But he's going for the win. And if I own a race team, I want my guy going for a win. We talked about this in the Cup side. Same thing on the Xfinity side. Noah had an opening that he hadn't seen, had the opportunity to get the nose in there, so we had to go for it. And then once you're in there, you're, again, eight tires corner better than four. You're at Bristol. You know that if you're going to win a race, you got to stay on that bottom. And when Justin went into the corner, he was on the door. I mean, there couldn't have been 2 inches between those cars, and that caused the back end to step just a little bit on Noah. He washes up and takes him out. It wasn't like he just sailed it in, bounced it off of him, and kept going. He was trying to make the corner, and it just circumstances lined up that they made contact, and ultimately Justin spun out, which that was the bummer of that. I'm sure Junior Motorsports doesn't want to see that happen. But as far as going for a win, I mean, a couple laps to go in a race, I got no problem with drivers putting it on a line and sticking their head in there and trying to grab that top spot. I would be more upset if Noah had just backed off and said, oh, Justin, you're the senior guy, you're the head dude, you go ahead and take it. And as Noah said, he came to the racetrack with his crew chief and nobody else. So that was who he was racing for, and I'm proud of him.
Yeah, I find this to be interesting, because obviously it's two teammates, and when two teammates have a run-in like this, there's got to be tension within the drivers. However, I do know, and you know, spending some time with both Noah and Justin Allgaier, like a little over a year ago, I got invited to the Xfinity Takeover of Philadelphia when NASCAR kind of took it over for the day. And, you know, obviously Noah then was a rookie in Xfinity, and he would lean on Justin. You could just see it. He would call him Uncle Justin, and it was kind of funny. So, you know, no, on the Zoom call post-race with media, Noah basically, like you said, he showed up to the track with his crew chief and nobody else. And I asked him, I said, you know, forget Justin, but would you expect retaliation from any teammate if you raced him like that? And he's pretty much said, you know, if you're a man, when you throw a punch, you got to expect to punch back. So he said, you know, in response to other questions that, you know, he doesn't necessarily expect retaliation, but wouldn't be surprised if he got it. So I'm sure this will be hashed over. I don't think Allgaier will do any kind of payback deliberately. But I do think that if they're racing for a win, that they're going to race each other hard. Allgaier is not going to give him any room. But it's funny because you mentioned how this is the exact same thing that happened in the Cup race, except Allgaier, I mean, the top lane just didn't work in the Xfinity race for whatever reason. It worked on restarts, but also it didn't even really work on restarts compared to Cup. But it didn't work. It didn't come in at all for whatever reason. So Allgaier kind of pinched Noah. Noah got loose. Put Allgaier on the wall. I was listening to Allgaier's radio channel live when that happened. He was silent. The radio was silent the whole time until he got to pit road, and he's like, I think we knocked the right rear out of it. Not only did it knock the right rear out of it, the right front was destroyed. So, very, very interesting stuff at Junior Motorsports. And you know, good for Noah, though, because, like, he came into the year. Last year, he didn't win a race in Xfinity. Junior Motorsports as a whole only won two races. One of them being in the most boring race probably ever, at Daytona in the season opener. And then, you know, the penultimate race at Phoenix when Justin Allgaier won. Noah came, you know, he didn't win last year, only led, you know, I'm looking up the stats right now, so give me a second, but didn't lead a ton, didn't spend much time in the top 2 to 3. He did lead 72 laps, but last night alone he led 55, and he's led 147 for the year. He's proven something this year, and I think he's bound to prove something. I feel like he feels like he has to prove something. So, good for Noah. It's first, you know, win on a traditional racetrack. Obviously won at Daytona earlier this year, like I said, but I don't know. I know in a way it's good for Junior Motorsports, but then in another way it's kind of, you know, bad for Junior Motorsports because they have a wrecked race car in Allgaier and a Nat.
Yeah, it depends on how it's handled. And knowing Justin and the man that he is and the racer that he is, I'm sure it will be handled properly.
Classic.
And he will talk to Noah on his own. They'll discuss it, whether they agree to disagree or not. That'll be the end of it. And he'll end up, you know, they'll end up going on their merry way. Will he race Noah harder if they're going for a win in the future? Probably. And I don't blame him. And if I'm that owner, I want that. So I got no problem with that. But the way Justin is and the way he races and the way he handles himself, it won't turn into a thing. If it was somebody else that was going to get bent out of shape and carry a grudge and, you know, not share information and just turn the team inside out, then it could be a big deal. But that's not the way Justin portrays himself, and it won't be a problem. You mentioned on the high groove, the one driver that I saw make the high groove work for about 5 laps was Brandon Jones.
Yeah.
He had a run there in the middle of the race where he was running that kind of Logano line where he was almost diamonding the corner, and he was flying coming off the corners. And then after like 5 laps, all of a sudden it was done, and he ended up dropping back to like 8th. But that was the only car I really saw ever get up above the sticky stuff and really do anything. And I don't – it was weird. Just all weekend at Bristol I thought was kind of weird, the way the – I felt like the adhesive never really wore off in the cup race, because last year that was the thing that I thought was so cool about that adhesive, was during the race it would wear off, and eventually you almost were penalized if you went down into it, and the line really moved around. This time it seemed like it stayed on the bottom the whole time and never really peeled up. So, yeah, I'm with you. Good for Gregson. I know that he's feeling some pressure because you're in some of the best cars in series and you got to perform. And again, when a lane opens and you have an opportunity to win a race with a couple laps to go in the event, you have to go for it.
Yeah, and I think even if it was a different driver at Junior Motorsports, obviously Allgaier races with a lot of class and he's very respected in Xfinity because he's been around the series, you know, obviously had a brief stint in Cup for 2 years, but he's been around that series since 2009. As a mainstay pretty much. So he's very respected, but say that was like Daniel Hemric, who is running part-time for Junior Motorsports, I think has a lot to prove this year, even though he's running, you know, not a full schedule, but 21 races, that also adds into the factor. If that was someone like him, I think maybe, you know, and Hemric's a clean racer, so that kind of maybe blows my point away. But he might rough up Gregson in the future, only to the fact that he has a lot to prove this year, and he doesn't have much time. He only has limited races. So maybe even like Jeb Burton, like that 8 car would be a different scenario, I think, because there's part-time drivers. So that would be a cause of concern. But like you said, good for Gregson. I think needed the win. I thought he had a lot to prove this year, and so far he's living above my expectations. 2 wins in 7 races, not too shabby for that 9 team. And Dave Ellens, the crew chief, is just, he can work with any driver, it seems like. Won a championship with Chase Elliott, won a championship with Tyler Reddick and William Byron back-to-back years, and now Gregson, one of 2 drivers that have 2 wins this year with Chase Briscoe. So I don't know now. This 9 team is kind of quiet, but it's under the radar, and it's making its way to the front as a mainstay in Xfinity.
Yep, and they're probably going to be in the playoffs now. So it again comes to a seasoning thing, getting more experience for Noah, getting him to learn how to run these races and win these races and what it takes to get there. Also, kudos in the Xfinity race for the booth. The Busch brothers in the booth was good. I felt like Kyle was a little forced early on, but once it really got into the race, especially when he was getting on the mic and talking to the drivers, got Noah Drake to say shit on national TV. That was pretty funny. But yeah, he just his insight, and he just I mean, it was almost, and God, it pains me to say, but it was almost Tony Romo-esque. You know, Romo is one of those guys that it just lays out what's going to happen before it happens. And Kyle was kind of doing the same stuff, giving you reasonings. And then at one point in the race, I forget who it was, tried some shenanigans on a restart. And Kyle was like, I see what he did there. And Kurt's like, are you going to tell us? And he's like, nope. And I'm just like, that's awesome. So Busch is basically scouting out what people are doing to put in his back pocket for future races. That absolutely cracked me up. But yeah, I mean, it was just the banter between the two, Kurt finding stats that put him ahead of Kyle and different things. I thought it was great. And, and thumbs up to Kyle for sticking with it. When they moved the race to Monday, yesterday was Samantha's birthday. And any husband will tell you that's a dangerous thing to put something ahead of your wife's birthday. But I was happy. I hope that the Busch brothers become an announcing duo at some point in time.
Yeah, look, and I've been very complimentary of the Xfinity series, and specifically Adam Alexander for Fox, because that guy does a tremendous job, in my opinion. I think eventually after Mike Joy retires, that's going to lead to Adam Alexander in the booth. I hope it does. Because he's very good. Obviously, he has experience at, you know, announcing cup races with TNT. But what he does with – there's never a consistent lineup in the Xfinity series booth for Fox Sports, and that's a good thing. Because you have moments like last week with Jamie McMurray and Clint Bowyer where it was entertaining, very entertaining. You know, I tweeted this out, but last week I was watching the race at my girlfriend's house, and her father really, you know, just a casual fan, not a big fan of racing, but he thought the racing was great, because it was, but the commentary, you know, kind of attracted him to want to watch more races. So when you have a chemistry in the booth, and that was McMurray's first race ever broadcasting, to my knowledge. And then last night, you know, it was Kyle's first time, at least for Xfinity. And Kurt, he's been there a couple times, but so good. And there was a moment, I cracked me up. Oh, my God. So much so that I went back and I replayed it. And you probably know where I'm going, because I also tweeted this out. When they were talking about the win last year at Kentucky for Kurt. And Kyle kind of describing how Kurt was scheduled to drive fly back on Kyle's plane.
Oh, yeah, he was supposed to get a ride.
But, you know, as Kyle does, upset when he doesn't win, finish second, obviously in a great finish, but didn't win, upset, whatever, and Kurt calls him out, impersonates him, and, like, upset Kyle voice. It was so funny. So funny.
Yeah, that was golden.
I was highly entertained by all of it last night. And Xfinity, the racing is just so good. The bodies, the composite bodies are amazing. I don't know enough. It's the best series, in my opinion, in terms of real, you know, raw racing on the racetrack. Though the cup race this weekend was really good.
Yeah, I still think trucks are the best out of the three national series. We just don't get enough of them. But right now, that package at Xfinity is fabulous. And I don't want to start looting and rioting, but we need to have peaceful protests in the NASCAR world until we get that in cup. Because the packages in Cup outside of short track are just not getting it done. And it's so blatantly obvious what good racing is with a good package. Mm-hmm. And the Xfinity's got it right now. And I'm all for having a movement, having a moment where we all stand up and go to Daytona and stand in front of the big glass tower and demand that we're not leaving until they change the package so that it matches. I do hope that the composite body comes to the Cup side, which I believe it's supposed to.
I think it will. Yes.
Simply because, and again, you're dealing with the best drivers, best engineers, best teams in the world. They maximize every millimeter on those cars for downforce. And when somebody gets out of shape and scrapes a wall, it literally costs them tenths of seconds. And with that composite body, it rebounds and goes back to the shape. You don't lose those tenths of seconds. And that's where it has been a frustration of mine this year to see when somebody makes even the slightest contact with another car or with the wall, it ruins their day.
Right.
And I mean, this is stock car racing. You're supposed to be able to beat and bang and bend fenders and trade paint. Your day shouldn't be ruined by a crinkle in a fender. And hopefully, knocking on wood, it's supposed to happen. We get those composite bodies that will eliminate the bad day from a slight misstep.
Yeah, the racing is tremendous in Xfinity. It was definitely Brian Keselowski, but I want to say, you know, he has a lot of really good insight on Twitter. And I know you talked about that last podcast about the truck race, but I believe he was the one that said that the current Xfinity car is kind of shaped, you know, outside of the body, with which it's composite. But it's kind of shaped like the 2008, I believe, was the year, Cup car. So obviously back then there was a lot of good racing too, outside of the Car of Tomorrow. That was atrocious. But Neff, anything else on Bristol before we get into picks for a triple header this week in Atlanta and then also the Cup race at Martinsville next Wednesday?
I don't think so. Bristol is what Bristol is. I know we're learning a lot as this whole process evolves and we continue to move forward, but I hope the powers that be have learned that running the spring race at Bristol in June is a way better idea than running it way early in the year.
Perfect weather.
God, the weather was phenomenal. The racing was fantastic. I truly hope we move that race to June permanently.
Yeah, it was relieving to not have to, you know, kind of postpone your plans for the night. Yeah. Postpone your plans because there's a race on when it's raining, so they have to postpone it or whatever. But regardless, very good racing this weekend, and I expect that to continue this weekend into Atlanta, Neff, because Atlanta, I mean, let's face it, it's a worn out track surface, hasn't been paved in over 20 years or so.
I think it was 97, I believe.
Yeah, so it's been a long time. And usually you see the same guys run up front here. But you could see like a Tyler Reddick sneak into the picture this weekend, you know, maybe. But let's start with trucks because we got a triple header. The truck race is at 1 o'clock on Saturday. I'll start first. I'm going to go with Johnny Sauter. I feel like he needs a win. You know, he started off the year decent with ThorSport this year. Last year did not go as planned. His first year back with the team. I say Johnny Sauter gets his first win of the season.
I'm going to go with my man, now, Matt Crafton.
Kyle Busch is in the race, so we
got
to...
I refuse to pick Kyle Busch in a truck race because that's beyond a layup.
37.5 win percentage.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a given. You know that. And by the way, how about 47 cars on the entry list?
Yeah.
Seven cars going home again, or trucks going home again.
Including David Reagan.
Yeah, hate to see that. Hate it for Bryant Barnhill. Brian Barnhill is a regular that runs at Myrtle Beach Speedway and is slowly but surely getting himself into the national picture. So I hated that he didn't get a chance to run that race. That would have been a great one for him. But I'm going with Matt Crafton. Years ago at a truck race at Atlanta, Crafton called me out in the media center because I always used to ask him when he was going to win, and he finally won at a race I was at, so he gave me shit for it. So I feel like he's going to do it again, and and put the old lime green 88 in victory lane.
Doesn't surprise me he called you out, because he's a very blunt person, kind of underratedly blunt, but it's well appreciated, at least on my end. So
another one of those really dry sense of humor guys
for that sure.
I love so much.
Old school. Xfinity race. Now,
we don't have a bounty again, do we? They're only doing a bounty that one time,
yeah,
right?
I believe the bounty is over.
I say, because Chase Elliott's in this thing again, so that could get exciting.
Yeah, it's his home racetrack, too. But enough. Xfinity, I think, probably another great race. Saturday afternoon, we got the Dash for Cash, which Xfinity's putting on. Really good, you know.
Which is another reason I felt bad for Justin Allgaier.
Yes.
Because that wreck took him out of that Dash for Cash money.
Right, $100,000 Xfinity puts on every year. You got Noah Gragson, Chase Briscoe, Brandon Jones, and Harrison Burton all involved in it. For Briscoe, you know, Bob Packers asked him the question after the race last night, because Briscoe finished second. If you know, running, being in the Dash for Cash is important just for funding for the team. And he said, yeah, because, you know,
absolutely.
We talked about last week, it was very late in the offseason that Briscoe knew he was returning to Stuart Haas. So not only because of that, but Chase Briscoe runs really well at tracks like this. I'm going with the 98 car to win its third race of the season.
I don't blame you. That would have been my pick too, just because it's old school, worn out, you know, asphalt that's very similar to Salem in Indiana, which is Chase Briscoe's favorite track. So I'm with you. I think he's probably going to be there. So thinking about it, man, that's a tough call, because I was thinking Briscoe. So I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Ah, let's go with, is Chastain in?
Yeah, he drives the 10. Entry list. Drives the 10 full time.
Chastain's in. He's had some bad luck of late. Ross Chastain a shout. Yeah, let's give Ross Chastain a shout. Hopefully he's going to have everything come together for a weekend and see that 10 get to victory lane.
Yeah, his Austin Cindric and Michael Nutt's race was over last night before it even really started. With a spin by Chastain. It looked like he cut a right front tire, got into Cindric. Cindric hit the wall hard. And then Michael Annette tore off the rear of the 10 car. So all three.
Yeah, it looked like he was going to slide down the track, and instead he came back up a little bit, and there wasn't quite enough room.
Yeah, so all three drivers need a rebound race this weekend, which that leads me to Cup Neff. I feel like this is going to be a good race. You know, past Atlanta races are usually pretty good. I'm going to go Chase Elliott. I say Chase Elliott wins at his home track. He's got the raw speed. It might be a cheap kind of way to pick, because he definitely has the best car over the past, you know, since we've returned. I say Chase Elliott gets the win in his home track.
Another cheap call for me, but Kevin Harvick is really good at Atlanta.
He is.
And those guys have had speed all since we've been back, pretty much. And he ran well at Darlington. I think he's going to do it again at Atlanta.
Would not he runs the awesome line at Atlanta, right around that bottom. He makes that work, finds a lot of speed. Wouldn't surprise me either if Keselowski won 3 of 4, because he's really good at Atlanta. And then we got Cup going to Martinsville next Wednesday night. Neff, our podcast probably won't publish that week until Thursday, so that'll be our next scheduled podcast after this one. So I want to make predictions for Martinsville. I'll let you go first, since it'd be a new week. Who you got winning in Martinsville?
All Denny Hamlin all the time.
Denny Hamlin is very good at Martinsville.
Yes, he is.
I'm going to surprise some people probably with this pick. I picked Chase Elliott, a Hendrick Carr for Atlanta. I'm going to pick a Hendrick Carr at Martinsville. I say Jimmy Johnson gets a win at Martinsville.
There you go.
You know, one of his best tracks on the circuit. He hasn't won there since 16, which was...
That's the thing, though. I was going to say, it's one of his best tracks, but they have really struggled the last couple years.
Yeah, hasn't been good there recently, but he wasn't good there either for a couple years before he won in 16. So I say he wins. Look, he's been fast really all year. Doesn't have the results to show for it necessarily. Obviously got disqualified after his runner-up finish in Charlotte, the 600. Ultimately finished 40th. But I'd say he's going to get a win before long. I say Martinsville is that race. Neff, any final thoughts before we sign off?
One thing, a dark horse for Atlanta. Watch Tyler Reddick. I was just talking about, I bet they catch lightning in a bottle sometime. That track lines up for Tyler's style so well. And I would not be surprised to see the 8 team shock the world and put it in victory lane. No, other than that, I don't have anything else. Love your kids. Love your neighbors. Love everybody. I mean, I know it's social distancing and all that crap, but it's time to go out and hug your friends and hug your enemies and get this country back on track.
Yeah, we talked about a lot of heavy topics at the beginning, but it's something that, look, we're going to have to look at, hope to improve on going forward as a person, as people, as a community, as a society. So hopefully, you know, the next time we talk to you, the riots and the looting and the violence will diminish. And the peaceful protesting, I hope, continues, because we really do need a change in this world, because it is a divided country right now and really has been for a long time. So, Neff, we talked about a lot this week. Very, very tough to talk about. But we're back to some racing this weekend. I'm excited. And next week we'll have it for you, and we'll have a lot to talk about, kind of similar to last week's podcast where we have a whole bunch of races at once. But until then, Neff, we out.
Deuces.